This is Teresa Trent, and you are listening to Books to the Ceiling, a podcast that features excerpts from new mysteries coming on to the market. This week, it's all about Christmas in New Orleans, gumbo, beignets, and the uncovering of an adoption mystery which leads to murder. Grab some sweet tea because we have a new Ellen Byron book, Crescent City Christmas Chaos. Here's a little more about the book. It's Christmas. It's cozy. It's culinary. It's chaos. It's the fourth book in this fabulous mystery series with a vintage flair from USA Today's best-selling and Agatha Award-winning author, Ellen Byron. Have yourself a merry little murder. Ricky James Diaz gets the best present ever when her parents arrive in New Orleans for the holidays. Not only is it a chance to catch up, it's also an opportunity to jog her mom Josepha's memory about Ricky's adoption. The details have always been shrouded in mystery, and Ricky understands why when she learns her mother was blackmailed for years simply for not wanting to lose her precious daughter. But digging into the past lands the James Diaz clan in water hotter than a big pot of gumbo when the woman who extorted Ricky's mom is found dead at her home. Josepha becomes the primary suspect. Now Ricky has another murder to solve, and tracking down a killer in Crescent City is going to take a miracle. Luckily, tis the season, and Ricky has all the staff at the Bon V Culinary House Museum on hand to help. Can she prove her mother's innocence and have the case wrapped up in time for Christmas? Now here is an excerpt from Crescent City Christmas Chaos. Chapter 2. Since Eugenia was possibly the last purist on the planet who refused to put up a single strand of Christmas lights before Thanksgiving, the day after turned into an all-hands-on-deck day of decorating for the holidays instead of Black Friday. Ricky was grateful to landlady Kitty Cat for hosting her parents, freeing her up to turn Miss V's vintage cookbook and kitchenware into a must-shop holiday destination. Olivia Felice, Eugenia's granddaughter, which made her another of Ricky's newly discovered cousins, blew into the shop through its mullioned glass French doors. Miss V's was located in a lovely room formerly known as the 19th century mansion's ladies' parlor. Pale green damask covered its walls, and ornate molding painted white encircled the room. A glistening chandelier dangled from an intricately carved ceiling medallion. The instant Ricky had stepped foot in the parlor, it felt like the perfect home for the gift shop dedicated to sharing the culinary past with fans of all things vintage.
Ugh, I'm so glad to be here and out of the school library. Can I tell you how much I hate finals?
Olivia accompanied the statement with an eye roll and a flip of her thick, dirty blonde ponytail. A junior at Tulane, majoring in communication, she added a minor in psychology, motivated by a recent misjudgment of someone's character that had almost led to her death. She transitioned from intern to Ricky's sole part-time employee and lifetime young friend, as well as relative.
"I'm glad you're here. I could use help decorating this." Ricky motioned to an artificial Christmas tree that exceeded her petite height by a foot. "I think I've bought up food-themed ornaments at every thrift shop in town. I thought we could fill in with smaller kitchenware items like these old measuring spoons." She held up a set of nesting tin spoons. "Every item on the tree will be for sale, so I'm going with white lights. Colored lights would be too busy."
"I'm on it." Olivia reached into one of the two big boxes loaded with holiday paraphernalia. She pulled out a long strand of tiny white lights.
"And no, I haven't heard anything from a crew."
"I was afraid to ask." While Ricky was born in the Big Easy, she'd moved to Los Angeles as a child when Josepha met and married Luis. She was still learning the ways of the quirky city she now called home.
Olivia had educated her on the machinations of crews, the organizations responsible for the city's elaborate Mardi Gras parades and balls. The crews chose local young women, mostly debutantes, for their courts. While the carnival season didn't officially kick off until January 6th, Twelfth Night, invitations to join the courts were delivered much earlier via a court call paid to the future queen and maids by representatives of the crew. New Orleans may celebrate the winter holidays in a big way, but to Ricky, the local greeting of Happy Almost Mardi Gras made the city's priorities clear. Olivia threaded the lights through the tree's branches. I honestly don't care if I get a court call or not. I might even say no if they ask me to be on one. Liar, Ricky teased. A fierce squawking disrupted the conversation. Ricky and Olivia dropped what they were doing to peer outside the shop's bay window, where they saw Bon V's resident peacocks, Gumbo and Jambalaya, chasing co-worker Theo Charbonnet, Eugenia's nephew and yet another cousin to Ricky, across the mansion's verdant green side yard. "You okay?" Ricky called Theo. "I read somewhere that the Victorians put stuffed peacocks on the top of their trees instead of stars or angels," he called back. "Think about it." He disappeared around the corner. The women left the window and resumed decorating. "Have you noticed Cousin Theo's been acting more weird than usual?" Olivia asked as she added the second strand of lights to the tree. "I wouldn't call it weird," Ricky said. "More like he's being squirrely, secretive. I think he's up to something." "That's a scary thought." Ricky nodded in agreement. While she and Theo had achieved a rapprochement, she still wasn't sure she could completely trust him. "So your parents are really nice," Olivia said, providing a change of subject. "Oh, thanks. They're the best. I'm so glad you got to meet them. Are you going to do anything special while they're here, like a swamp tour or something?" Ricky, who was about to hang a ceramic beignet ornament, paused. "Actually, since Dad will be busy on the TV shoot, I thought Mom and I could work together and dig up clues about my bio mom." Ricky had been abandoned as an infant in New Orleans' infamous charity hospital, her teen mother disappearing after giving birth. She thanked the universe for Josepha, a NICU nurse who fell in love with the parentless baby and adopted her, parenting as a single mother until she met and fell in love with Luis, who happened to be in town working on a film. Ricky adored her parents beyond belief, but questions about her past drove her to seek answers. So far, she'd learned that Genevieve Charbonnet had secretly given birth to a baby who would have been Ricky's grandparent. Her friend Mordant, who'd added private investigator to a list of occupations that included haunted tour guide and Bon V handyman, had tracked down the father of Genevieve's baby. Sadly, he died at the age of 24 of a rare heart condition. Ricky resumed hanging ornaments. "Mordant hasn't been able to come up with any leads since he discovered my great-grandfather's grave, and I haven't come across any new connections on my genealogy sites. I thought I'd drive Mom around to see some of the places from when we lived here and see if anything jogs a memory that might be useful." "Sounds like a plan. I'm starving." Ricky grinned, amused by Olivia's 180-degree turn to her own needs. "You keep decorating. I'll get us a snack." She left the shop and headed down the mansion's capacious center hallway. Cookie waved from the beautifully appointed living room, which she was showing off to a group of tourists. Bon V was currently low on both tour guides, who were paid part-timers, and docents who volunteered their time, so Cookie and the other staff members had been drafted to lead tours. Ricky gestured to her and Cookie detached from her group. "I'm making a run to the cafe. Do you want anything?" "An iced coffee would be great. It's on me." Cookie reached into the phone pocket of her leggings and extracted a 20. She gave it to Ricky. "Plenty more where this came from," she said in a low voice. "This group's a mix of Houston and Dallasites, or whatever you call them. We just started the tour and they're already trying to out-tip each other to prove their city is better." "Nice. I want to buy Nat the best Christmas present I can, so I need these groups to make it rain." Cookie rubbed her thumb to her index and middle finger, indicating money. She was dating the neighbor next door to Bon V and determined to make him the future Mr. Cookie Yanover. Any idea what you're getting, Virgil?
Not a clue, Ricky said. I'd better get to the cafe before it closes.
Ricky continued down the hallway, embarrassed by her obvious change of subject and feeling guilty because she hadn't even thought about getting Virgil a gift. It's because our relationship is so new, she told herself, batting back the insecurity that led her to fear she and the handsome, successful chef weren't destined to go the distance. By the time Olivia reluctantly left a few hours later to continue studying for finals, Miss V's was decorated to the point of kitschy. No shelf was left untouched by thrift shop Santas, nutcrackers, ornaments, and a variety of small artificial trees and materials, ranging from silvery mylar to one made of oyster shells wired together as branches. Ricky's favorites were the items that were Louisiana-themed, like the alligator nutcracker wearing a Santa hat, which claimed a space next to a ceramic ornament of Santa riding an alligator.
You could put together a whole display of gator items, Ricky started, not realizing she had company. She turned to see Josepha.
Mom, hey, the women hugged. I thought your dad might want to have dinner, but he and Virgil still have a lot to go over. He's taking a break, though.
Josepha indicated the bay window. Ricky glanced out of it and saw Luis doing a series of choreographed movements in slow motion.
Dad's still doing Tai Chi?
Yep.
It relaxes him, and Lord knows that man could use some relaxing.
Josepha delivered this in a droll but affectionate tone.
Anywho, I thought me and my darling daughter might go out for dinner.
A giant yes to that, a thought occurred to Ricky. I just want to make one stop on the way.
Ricky locked up the shop and led her mother to the small staff lot where she parked her Prius. They followed Washington Avenue past lovely historic homes swathed in holiday lights and garlands, eventually reaching Claiborne Avenue, a much less scenic thoroughfare of dollar stores, gas stations, and fast food restaurants. Ricky made a right on Tulane Avenue, followed by two more right turns that placed them in front of what was once Charity Hospital, rendered uninhabitable after Hurricane Katrina, and now on the cusp of a new life, as Tulane University's new downtown medical school. Scaffolding covered the center of the massive 20-story edifice, but even at the tail end of twilight, much of the building's 1930s structure was still evident and impressive despite the years of decay. Josepha stared out the car window, her expression unreadable.
Why are we here?
You haven't been to New Orleans in so long, I thought maybe seeing Charity again might bring back memories.
About your bio, Mom?
Ricky nodded. Josepha clasped her hand and held it tight as she continued to stare out the window. She and Louise had been nothing but supportive in Ricky's quest for answers about her past, but Ricky sensed her mother's pain as she took in the abandoned monolith where she'd once pursued a career she loved. The two were silent for several minutes.
I wish I could remember something that would help,
Josepha finally said in a husky voice.
All I keep seeing is your tiny body in the NICU and how my heart broke for you and how that turned into a burning, all-consuming passion to be your mama.
Oh, Ricky fought back tears. I'm sorry, Mom. I shouldn't have brought you here.
Nothing to be sorry about, baby girl.
Josepha gave Ricky's hand another squeeze and then released it.
I'm glad to see the old place and know it's going to be brought back to do good things in this city. Hey, we're not too far from Mother's restaurant here. I could go for one of their oyster po' boys.
Let's do it, Ricky said, knowing a change of subject when she heard one. Ricky circled back to Tulane Avenue. As they drove, Josepha cheerfully recalled memories inspired by the locations they passed. Ricky noted that none involved Charity or her experiences as a nurse. Ricky mused that perhaps it was too painful for Josepha to recall that time in her life, but another thought loomed larger. Josepha was hiding something, and what she was hiding was tied to Ricky's birth. And that was an excerpt from Crescent City Christmas Chaos. Crescent City Christmas Chaos is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop.org, Goodreads, BookBub, Kobo, Google Play, Apple Books, and Severn House. Now here's a little more about our author. Ellen Byron is a USA Today best-selling author and recipient of multiple Agatha, Best Contemporary Novel, and Lefty, Best Humorous Mystery awards for her Cajun Country Mysteries, published by Crooked Lane, Vintage Cookbook Mysteries, Berkeley and Severn House, Catering Hall Mysteries, Kensington as Maria DeRico, and Golden Motel Mysteries, Kensington. She is also an Anthony Award nominee and an award-winning playwright. Byron spent 25 years writing TV hits like Wings, Just Shoot Me, and Fairly Odd Parents, plus pilots for all of the major networks before segueing into writing humorous mysteries. She blogs with Chicks on the Case, is a lifetime member of Writers Guild of America, and serves on the National Board of Mystery Writers of America. But she'll always consider her most impressive achievement working as a cater waiter for the iconic Martha Stewart. A native New Yorker, Byron is a graduate of Tulane University and lives in the Los Angeles area with her husband, daughter, and a rotating crew of rescue pups. You can find out more about Ellen at her website at ellenbyron.com. That's all we have this week on Books to the Ceiling. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to rate, review, follow, or share with friends who enjoy mysteries. Books to the Ceiling is a part of my author blog at teresatrent.blog, where you can find an archive of all of the podcasts. And don't forget to check out the giveaway page for your chance at gift cards and ebooks. You can subscribe to our newsletter on Substack. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I hope to see you again next time with a new mystery on Books to the Ceiling.